This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Adaptive Computing, providers of MOAB, the intelligent automation software that manages more of the most complex and advanced facilities in the top 500 than any other technology. www.adaptivecomputing.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Top 500, Green 500, winners and losers.
Highlights from Supercomputing 2010 in New Orleans. Hello and welcome to a special conference edition of HPC Wire Soundbite, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research, joined by my regular soundbite partner, Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Good evening, Michael.
Hey, good evening, Addison.
Michael, it's Thursday evening. It's dark outside. The conference floor has been steadily emptying for hours. We're about the only ones left here. Are you tired from walking a half a mile up and down the show floor?
I am. And I tell you, for a place called the Big Easy, this has not been easy. This is a tough show, and it's a big, huge convention center, and I tell you, we get our exercise here.
I love supercomputing every year. I heard a few people talking about they felt like the energy was down, but I think that was just a function of topology, of having this fettuccine of a convention center that stretched off the horizon in both directions.
Yeah, I think the convention center is like a mile long. I mean, there's two conventions here. We just have about a half of it or three quarters. And yeah, it's like a football field going from one end to the other. I think there were
at least one football field.
Yeah, we were over 10,000 people, but we were stretched out, and it's three floors, and the exhibition hall was just huge. I mean, you literally could have played a football game there if there weren't the exhibits.
Calisthenics notwithstanding, there's a lot of news for us to get through during the show. Why don't we start with early in the show, the big news at the top 500 list?
Yeah, that was big news. Now, of course, the top system wasn't a surprise. That was Tianhe 1A, which was sort of pre-announced last week. They got the 2.5 petaflop system on Linpack.
It was a surprise when they first started talking about it. It was just we were prepared for it now.
We were prepared for it this week, but that held its top ranking. Nobody else got even close to that, and it pushed Jaguar down to number two, and that was the first Chinese system and first GPGPU accelerated system on the top 500.
And that wasn't, China had another surprise in store for us, though.
Right. Actually, they had the number three system as well, which was an older system, so they took two of the top four, and the GPUs took basically three of the top four, and also, the U.S. was only one of those top four, and that was records all around. I mean, that we have never seen that.
Right, you're referring to the number four system was Tsubame 2 from Japan.
Yeah.
So Asia with three of the top four, and all of those powered by GPUs.
Right, and even in the top 10, U.S. had five, which is a good showing for a country, but for U.S., it's definitely below their normal batting that's average.
It's a little bit change from what we've seen in the past. Now, to be fair, I haven't heard any claims that Tianhe 1A is a more productive supercomputer at this point than Jaguar, but nevertheless, it's commanding a lot of attention.
It definitely is, and yeah, to make it a productive system, they're going to have to do a lot of porting of codes, but there's a lot of power in that system, obviously. I mean, the peak on that system was like near five petaflops. So Linpack is
just, you know, huge.
It's huge. I mean, there's just a lot of vector capability on that system, and they're going to make use of it one way or another. And yeah, it doesn't have the established code base that a Jaguar would have, but you know, quite a system and quite a coup for China, obviously.
Well, the top 500 isn't the only 500 in town anymore. You were also taking a quick peek at the Green 500, the statistics for which have just been released.
Right, and again, not any big surprises, but you know, we were just talking about GPUs and accelerators in the top 500, and it's even more skewed in the Green 500 because, as we all know, you know, the performance per watt on a GPU per flop is much better. So eight of the top 10 spots on the Green 500 were accelerated. Now, some of those were of the older PowerXL 8i, the cell-based processor system,
right,
from IBM. They're still on there. But, you know, there was a bunch of GPU systems on there, So eight of those spots. Now, what was interesting...
Really not a surprise to see all the accelerator-based solutions in the top, but nevertheless, there was a surprise at the very top.
Yeah, at the very top, and I don't think this showed up on the top 500, but there was a prototype of IBM's BlueJean Q system, which is not out yet, but they had a prototype there, and it did even better than the number two system, which was the Tsubame GPU accelerated system. It did quite a bit better.
Yeah, now this to me is a fundamental statement from IBM that it doesn't have to be a GPU-based accelerator future necessarily. Here we've got a new prototype BlueJean coming out, and presumably we'll have the performance characteristics of a next generation BlueJean, but already the prototype at the top of the Green 500 list.
Right, right. You can, there's different ways to slice this, and yeah, I mean, we don't know what, they're on a slower sort of cadence than the GPUs, but for now, well, and they're not out. I mean, this is a prototype system. So, you know, NVIDIA could have put together a prototype system maybe of their next generation system and gotten something equal. But it wasn't like close. It was like 50% better than Tsubame, this prototype system. So they did quite well. And yeah, so there's, you know, that's a sort of a low power PC ASIC driving that thing. That's just the next generation. So there's different ways to get power performance, obviously. But right now the commodity way to do it is with the GPU architecture. But that was interesting. So
now, Michael, from your seat as an editor, as a journalist, one of your challenges for a trade show like this is that we've got about 8,000 press releases coming across our desks.
Yes.
And there's no way that we can absolutely cover anything close to a fair share of them, because a lot of them are extremely interesting.
Yeah.
It's hard to sift through them all. So, you know, if we're not naming your announcement here, we apologize. But what we will do is maybe let you pick your favorite in terms of, well, not favorite, but maybe most notable. What do you think was the most notable of all the announcements that were made during the show?
So I thought the most notable one, and maybe I'm skewed towards, you know, sort of the big system announcements, which there weren't many. This was the only one, really. It was SGI's Prism XL announcement, which dropped on Monday, and this was basically the product that came out of their Project Mojo, which they've been talking about for a while. This is their accelerator system. It's a PCI infrastructure, and you can attach various accelerators in a very compact stick-like enclosure type rack system. Basically, you can stick any accelerator that basically works into a PCI slot. Now, they initial system's going to be either, it could come with either Tesla's GPUs, AMD/ATI GPUs of a certain kind, and Telera coprocessors, which are heavy on integer operations. So you can get those three either in December or January. Those three will start shipping. But in the future, basically any accelerator that kind of can hook into one of those slots, and of course, since it's basically it's a PCI-type system, obviously, it's somewhat future-proofed. Any future accelerators, the next generations will come out next year, you'll be able to stick them in. It's very dense, and the goal basically was to get a petaflop in a cabinet, and they sort of did this sort of in a backwards way. They basically stuck two racks together with some switches.
Make a bigger cabinet, you put a petaflop in it.
and they stuck the, I think it was the...
This is the answer to the old Zen riddle, how big is a box, right?
Right. And they stuck the most performant ATI GPUs in there, which were higher in single precision than some of the, or at least in density-wise, than some of the NVIDIA Fermi ones. And they got to just over a petaflop in a cabinet, but...
And that is noteworthy.
That is. I mean, that's a lot of power, and, you know, it's a dense system. It's not just accelerators. There's CPUs in there as well. They went to the low power, or the lower power Lisbon AMD Opterons to sort of get that density and power the way they wanted, but it's very much an accelerator system, and they're going to sell it into markets where they know they're producing those accelerated codes, and they can put most of the code in there. Like, you know, there's oil and gas, and there's some of the research codes.
So you're right. It's one of the big. It is the biggest system announcement that we saw during the show.
So yeah, and that's the one I saw. Now there were a ton of other announcements. Like
with regards to that though, it's not like other vendors didn't have new systems. I mean, HP earlier announced their ProLiant blades.
Right.
Cray, we've been talking about the Baker XE6 systems for a long time. So we're anticipating other significant systems or seeing demonstrations of other significant systems, but SGI was the big one that came out during the show.
Right. Now, yeah, and I thought that was, it's sort of unusual. It's the only really big system that came out during the show, but there were other stories, obviously, and You know, maybe you caught a different kind of story. What was the big announcement for you?
To me, the most significant announcement that I didn't know was coming was the fact that EMC purchased Isilon. And,
right.
And that kind of was an interesting one that even caught some of the Isilon employees by surprise while they were in the booth. I think it kind of rearranged their schedules a little bit for while they were here. But is pursuant to the ongoing consolidation that we're seeing in some of the HPC data management areas. Now, Isilon is a company that we've been talking about for a while in the HPC storage space. They've got a real presence there. EMC is a huge storage presence in general, not specific to EMC. So this is a reminder of other times when we've seen, you know, the big enterprise company snapping up the smaller performant more specific company. And I thought that was a noteworthy thing, EMC buying Isilon for $2.25 billion.
Wow. Yeah, that was definitely a big announcement and changes the storage landscape quite a bit. If only that, you know, and this has been going on for a while, there's been some consolidation in the storage industry because some of the bigger storage makers have been gobbling up the smaller ones, and it just takes more off.
Or server vendors buying storage.
Yeah,
I think the last time it was we were talking about HP buying iBricks.
Right, right. So there's more off the table. So the vendors, the server vendors that don't have a storage component or story, and they're counting on third-party
storage. There's a couple left who are up for grabs.
Yeah, and they've got to start looking and say, hey, I better pick one before they all go, before they all run off the shelf. So yeah, that's
a run on storage companies.
So yeah, that was a good story.
We'll be able to talk about a couple of the other trends that we've been seeing on the show floor and also pick our winner and loser from Supercomputing 2010. First, let's take a quick break from this sponsor.
Adaptive Computing's Moab Intelligent Automation products manage more of the world's most complex and advanced facilities in the top 500 than any other technology. 24% of the systems and 39% of the compute cores of the top 100 systems on the June 2010 Top 500 list. To find out what's new in Moab 6.0 for large-scale facilities and grids, hybrid GPGPU-based systems, HPC as a service, and HPC Cloud. Visit www.adaptivecomputing.com.
So Michael, we talked about Top 500, Green 500, what we thought were some of the most notable press releases. But press releases aside, walking around the show floor, seeing a lot of the different booths, what do you think was a noteworthy trend from this show?
Well, I mean, I'm always sort of interested in what's going on in the interconnect space because it's sort of a dynamic thing. And we saw some of it. I mean, there was a lot of 10 gigabit Ethernet products being shown at the show. I think more than ever. I think it looks like now 2011 is going to be the year for 10 gigabit Ethernet to be more prominent in this space. But you know, InfiniBand still closing the gap at the top 500. That's another thing we sort of didn't pay attention to because of all the other news. But basically, InfiniBand and Ethernet are sort of neck and neck now, and they've just InfiniBand is going up and the Ethernet component is going down on the top systems. Now, I think, you know, you've done research where off the top systems, just in general, InfiniBand actually has the majority of...
Right.
Of the
InfiniBand's got a slight lead. There are some verticals that are still aligned to Ethernet, though.
Right. So there's a dynamic that's going to happen next year, and we're going to see what's going to happen with 10 gigabit Ethernet. And honestly, I don't know. I talked to the different vendors. I think there's a place for them there, certainly to replace... systems that would have gone to Ethernet. It's natural once those systems, those motherboards get replaced with 10 gigabit Ethernet chips, they're going to be using those.
Yep.
But it's not clear to me how much the 10 gigabit Ethernet space will cut into InfiniBand at all. I mean, the latency is much better, the bandwidth is much better than it ever was in Ethernet before, but it doesn't quite meet InfiniBand performance. But I thought the other interesting component of the interconnect story was maybe the presence of more, you know, custom interconnects. I mean, we saw, you know, obviously Cray as Gemini. I mean, IBM BlueJeans got its own interconnect. But now, you know, I've been following this story for a while. There's Extol, which T Platforms is backing.
Yep.
Extol technology coming out of the University of Heidelberg. And they're basically, you know, they're claiming quite a bit better latency and bandwidth than InfiniBand, just
we
like
mentioned some of those custom interconnects during our opening press conference
right.
on Monday, and I agree with you. That's an interesting Interesting point.
Right, and I know the folks from IDC mentioned that there's others in the works from different vendors, and those will be interesting to see. Now, X-Toll is the only public one that's been talked about at all, and it sounds like it's got product plans at least in key platforms. They're going to put it right on the motherboard, and it's much like the other interconnects we've seen from some of the custom and proprietary systems, but this one is more can sort of fit on top of any sort of more commodity-based system and just kind of snap this in, so it's a little different type of thing. But I think what's interesting here is we might see sort of three layers of interconnect. We might see InfiniBand sort of at the top, but at the very top we might see more and more custom interconnects. And the top system was the Tianhe 1, and that had a custom interconnect. I can't remember if that was called Galaxy or not, but and there's quite a few custom networks at the top.
Absolutely.
And we might see more of that. So you might see InfiniBand sort of holding the high middle and low middle, maybe 10 gigabit Ethernet taking over where Ethernet used to be, which was the low middle and the bottom of at least the top 500 and in the market in general. So you might have a three-tiered structure sort of defining itself a little more clearly, since you can get so much more performance out of the interconnects now in the custom ones. So I thought that was an interesting dynamic to watch and something we'll be watching through the next year to see how it all develops. So what was your most notable trend that you kind of were looking at the show?
Well, not to stick with storage over much, but a big thing that that we always look for and that I thought there were significant developments with is what's been going on in the data management, particularly file system space. Coming forward. Now, really, there are two big stories. GPFS is pretty stable from IBM, and right. That's not the one that you need to go look for because you know that that's there in terms of a parallel file system. So there's two big questions on the table. One is what's going to go on with PNFS, and the other is what's going to happen with Lustre. Now, Lustre has been something that we've seen a lot of deployments on already. But there were questions around what the ongoing support network would be for high-performance computing, given Oracle's position with it. Now, a big surprise was that Oracle showed up.
Right.
And I think that was a last-ditch effort by some of the HPC storage people inside of Oracle to say, we've already got this deposit that we had down on the booth earlier, and let's see if we can pull off something. But they were here talking about their ongoing support of Lustre. It's still for Oracle hardware only, but, they were here.
Right. Actually, the team wanted to be here. I talked to them just a little bit, and they wanted to sort of reassure people that Lustre team is very much HPC facing. I mean, there are the ongoing development is going to be for Oracle hardware, but they are going to work with the HPC community for other people that want to get HPC functionality in there, and they're very much interested in that. They seem sincere about that.
The fact that they were here is noteworthy. OpenSFS had its own booth. WAM Cloud was here. So we are seeing a lot of focus on Lustre on an ongoing basis, at least for now. So we'll have to see how that continues to play out in HPC, including Oracle's ongoing role. Then the other portion of it is PNFS. To be totally honest, and I said this as much as a panelist on the PNFS Birds of a Feather session the other day, PNFS was right now at this show where we expected it to be this time last year. I kind of went into supercomputing last year looking for PNFS to be demonstrated in someone's booth and didn't find it at all. And now here we are, and Blue Arc had it running in their booth. Right. There was some energy around this Birds of a Feather session that was well attended by a lot of storage system administrators for high-performance computing sites who are interested in the final implementations of it. Microsoft has gotten involved, which is an interesting involvement for them because it shows that they're paying attention to addressing some of the limiting factors for Windows in terms of how are we going to get a parallel file system in and out of there. So we are seeing some interesting developments with PNFS, and I think we're going to have in 2011, finally, the year that we thought 2010 was going to be in terms of starting to see some deployments and implementations around it.
Yeah. Well, it almost sounds like the 10 gigabit E story all over again. So,
Me, it also sounds like the original InfiniBand story.
Yeah.
When InfiniBand first came out, that standard kind of got lost for about 18 months in the final planning of it before it kind of burst through the dam and came onto the market. And I think that might be the nature of some of these multi-vendor consortiums, when it gets down to implementation time, the multi-vendor aspect of it can get a little difficult.
Yeah, especially when you have like the juggernaut of Ethernet behind it. You've got so many players and stakeholders that, that things just move along slowly. And then PNFS, the same way. You've got all the NFS people. That's, you know, there's a lot of people to please there. So it's understandable, but yeah.
Well, we're coming down to the end of the show and the end of the podcast, and we've got one major task left to do. And as much as we could talk about any number of topics ad infinitum at supercomputing, we could have a week-long podcast. Let's try to sum it down to a winner-loser category, highlighting a disappointment from supercomputing 2010. Now, Michael, we've done this before. We're each trying to name a winner and a loser. The problem is we went into show prep and we'd picked exactly the same things. For once, yeah. We found ourselves in total agreement.
Yeah.
So we're just going to go one up, one down for the team of us here.
Okay.
I will give you, Michael, the privilege of announcing what we thought was the highlight, the winner trend from supercomputing 2010.
Okay. Well, instead of I think we both picked it. So it's not a vendor; it's a technology, and it's GPGPU. I mean, we saw it all over the floor today. Almost every booth had some component of GPU technology in it, and obviously, you know, NVIDIA was talking about it quite a bit, and a lot of the talks around here were about it. There was talks about exascale, heterogeneous exascale, that incorporated. Bill Daly's talk, of course, was all about it. It was all over the show. I mean, you couldn't miss it.
There's no avoiding GPU as the most victorious trend of supercomputing, not only up at the top echelon of the top 500 list, but also notable in things like Supermicro having components with GPUs. Supermicro, you know, their whole strategy that makes their business work is a fast follower approach. When they have a lot of users asking for a component, they go, they design it, and they sell it. The fact that they've got so many GPU components leads me to believe that they've got a demand for it. Supermicro is not going to do that right. Just as a flyer to see, I wonder if anyone's going to buy it. That means they've got customers asking for it.
Right, and you see all the tier ones are in it. I mean, IBM's in it. I mean, they're building BlueJeans, obviously, and power systems, but they've got GPGPU gear now, and HP and Dell and all of them. So, yeah, there's customer demand for this. Now, I mean, having said that, everybody here is not a GPGPU enthusiast.
Clearly no.
Clearly not.
And clearly there's a lot of work to do. My colleague Chris Willard, I was talking to him just previously, and he was starting a conversation about how much of an application is acceleratable, right?
Yeah.
And that's the absolutely valid concern, and one that's going to concern a wide range of application spectrums. There's also a lot in the way of ISVs with regards to GPUs and what the business model is going to be. In terms of porting things over.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's something we're going to follow. We'll have many podcasts on this.
Oh, we will. But the thing that finally occurred to me in the assessment of this is we see the GPU machines at the top of the top 500 list and all of the energy around it. As I listen to some of the arguments that I and other people have made against it, that it's hard to program, that it's hard for ISVs, that it doesn't work well for all applications, it occurred to me that we've heard this song before, and that these are all of the same limitations we talked about in the migration from SMPs to clusters and forcing people to go to MPI and how much of the application can truly be parallelized and
right. It's
not good for everybody. It's hard to program for. It's hard for the ISVs. It's also similar to what we heard when we went from vector to scalar.
Right.
And ultimately, when you get this much momentum behind something that's delivering that much more flops per dollar, the thing we've seen in this industry is speed wins.
Yeah.
And it might take a long time for some application sectors, but I'm coming around to the notion that this momentum for GPU is there and perhaps unavoidable.
Right. And it won't be easy at times, and it won't be perfect, and it won't be clean. It's always a little messy because it's technology adapting to other technologies. So, but yeah, your point is right. It's the power's there. You just have to find out how to tap into it. And people will, because that's where it
gets
is.
Gets fast enough, I'm going to buy it, and then I'm going to figure out later how to use it.
Right.
That's kind of where we are now.
So So I got to pick the winner. I'm going to leave you with the loser.
Well, we both picked it, as you pointed out before,
Michael.
You get
to articulate it first.
Well, all right. I think the loser that came off in all of this was the United States.
Yes.
And we both came in at kind of marvel that we both said it at the same time during pre-show. But a lot of the attention has been on non-American users at the top of the list, the technology gap. With three out of the four top supercomputing sites on the top 500 list coming in Asia. We didn't see a whole lot of big announcements out of U.S. government-funded supercomputing programs. We know they're out there, but the attention wasn't on them.
Right.
And then you have some vendors, as you were pointing out before, like T-Platforms, who are getting a lot of attention from outside of the U.S. Not that the American vendors didn't have some very fine announcements, but relative to the balance that we've seen at other shows, which have been very U.S. dominated, right. The U.S. kind of took a little bit of a beating here.
Yeah, and I think it relates to the fact that the U.S. community is much less enthusiastic in general about GPUs than the others, because it's reflected in the list. Like, we started out at the beginning of the show.
NVIDIA is an American company. They're pretty enthusiastic about it.
They're enthusiastic themselves, but we said three of the top four systems were GPU systems, but those systems were also non-U.S. systems. And the U.S., The first GPU system on the U.S. was way down the list. I mean, Keeneland, the first Keeneland system from Georgia Tech and Oak Ridge was announced, and it's on the list, but it's a small system. It's a relatively small system. They'll get a bigger system. They didn't make a big deal about it. It's not at the top of the top, and there's just much less enthusiasm in the U.S. community for this technology, and I think that sort of tracks why I think we both think they're losers, because and maybe, you know, maybe
this is unpatriotic of us. The U.S. are losers here, Mike. Oh, this even extended into the press conference where, you know, and as much as I don't like to talk about too much the excellent work of our fine competitors at IDC, but a good portion of their press briefing was on a project they'd done with the European Union about how they were advising the EU on how to get to the top of the world in the supercomputing market.
Yeah.
So a big portion of that was focused on here's how IDC is helping Europe get ahead, and you know, that was another thing right off the top going against the Americans.
Right, and you mentioned T-Platforms at the beginning. They've been making news, and actually, they're starting to kind of penetrate North America. They're going to have some distributors. They're looking to get some distributors in North America now. They're expanding beyond Europe, so we're sort of seeing some of the European companies coming this way. There's another company called Eurotech, which I talked to recently.
Eurotech's got a fine presence. I've spoken with them before.
Yeah, they're looking at the North American market as well. They're more in Europe right now, but they've got a very, very interesting technology and system. So we're seeing sort of the reverse flow of what we saw maybe in the last decade.
We've mentioned Bright Computing before. They're based out of Europe. They've gotten funding and another cluster management firm coming in. So that trend is ongoing. All of this brings up the question, is the U.S. going to respond? Are we going to be having the same conversation year after year, or is this you know, a big thing where the U.S. throws a whole lot of money at it and takes it the other direction?
Well, part of it is, you know, part of it is, like we were talking about, part of it is the GPU story. So that story is not done yet. There could be challengers there from Intel. There could be other solutions out there that we don't know about. And maybe they, you know, the U.S. will end up looking, you know, very good at this, that they picked right and they didn't get... They go down this path that maybe is a dead end. But right now, it looks like they're just behind the curve.
To me, you put these Chinese systems at the top of the list, and regardless of how you're measuring it and all the arguments you can have about the efficiency to GPU, in my estimation, there's no way the U.S. doesn't respond to that.
Yeah.
It's too big a deal.
Yeah, and I think we will see something, but it's a slow process. I mean, these are the top systems are expensive, and you've got... You know where the money is. Is it the NSF or it's the DOE? So they've got to get on it. And those procurement cycles are relatively long. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But the more nimble companies got the GPUs first, and the U.S. has now got to do something.
Well, regardless of all of that, one thing we know for sure is that supercomputing 2011 will still be in the U.S.
Yes.
We're headed to Seattle.
Yes.
We'll have Cray and Microsoft on the home field advantage.
That's
for the show. We were just in Seattle not too long ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, and Looking forward to going back. It's a great city. I like visiting, and I always love supercomputing.
And this was a great show, too. It was a very interesting city, New Orleans. And
New Orleans was an excellent host, despite the fact that we had to walk about 2 miles up and back the convention center all the time. It was a great space, great city. I love New Orleans. I had a great time. I hope you did as well, Michael.
It was a great city, great food and entertainment. It's a cool place.
I think if I lived here, I would weigh realistically about 600 pounds. The food that we've had while we were here has been unbelievable, and I hope we make it back.
All right, well, that'll do it for the show for tonight, and hopefully we'll see you a regular time next week. We'll pick it up again for our next show.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Adaptive Computing, providers of MOAB, the intelligent automation software that manages more of the most complex and advanced facilities in the top 500 than any other technology. www.adaptivecomputing.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.